This is Regenerative Skills, the podcast helping you to learn the skills and solutions to create an abundant and connected future. I'm your host, Oliver Gaucher. So at this point, I think we all know that YouTube videos, social media posts, and blog snippets will only get you so far. If you really want to develop the knowledge and skills you need to live regeneratively, you need the thorough information in a full book. Through their diverse range of publications, New Society Publishers books explore topics that are at the forefront of creating positive change in our world. From regenerative agriculture and permaculture to social justice and eco-conscious living, their books cover a wide spectrum of subjects that empower readers to lead more regenerative and fulfilling lives. So whether you're a seasoned environmentalist, a curious beginner, or someone simply seeking inspiration and guidance on your journey towards regenerative living, New Society Publishers is here to support you every step of the way. If you subscribe right now to their newsletter at newsociety.com, you'll be the first to receive sneak peeks at new content and get discounts on upcoming title releases. You'll even get an exclusive discount code on their first purchase of books, ebooks, or audiobooks. So sign up today at newsociety.com. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back. So though I've highlighted this before on the show, it bears repeating. So many of the stress factors on farms are caused by money. Now, either not being able to generate enough, or being in debt, or not having control over the expenses and the cash flows, or another one that I see time and again is not paying yourself a salary and just hoping for a profit at the end of the year. And of course, this is hardly the most interesting part of the work for anyone I know who farms, but it doesn't change the fact that a farm is a business, and in order for it to function well and enable us to do the parts that we love, we need to make sure that the financial side is as healthy as the land. So here today to shed light on the unique challenges and opportunities that farmers face on the financial management side of their work is Julia Shanks. Julia works with food and agricultural entrepreneurs and organizations as a business strategist, analyst, and educator. She brings a broad range of professional experiences to her clients with a background that ranges from pilot to chef to serial entrepreneur. She combines the practicality of an accountant with the creativity of a chef. And through her consulting practice, Julia helps food and farm businesses maximize profits and streamline operations through business planning, feasibility studies, and operational audits. She provides financial management trainings to farmers and business advisors who work with farmers. Julia shares her tools and knowledge more broadly in her second book, The Farmer's Office. This book is a practical, hands-on guide to help farmers think like entrepreneurs so that they can build financially sustainable businesses. In this episode, Julia and I dig into the common pitfalls that she has observed from the farmer clients that she works with, and we try to unpack the myths and the misconceptions about accounting and financial terms that are at the root of many of these mistakes. We take a particular look at the all-too-common debt cycles that many farmers are in, as well as what it takes to get out of them. Julia also calls attention to the risks and the variables that are inherent to farm enterprises before we get into tools and resources that she considers to be essential for financial success on a farm. We cover a lot of ground, from doing financial assessments of new ventures and investments to ways of establishing fiscal resilience in these uncertain times. Now again, I know that this topic is unusual for what I normally focus on this podcast, but it's so heartbreaking for me to watch many of the farmers that I admire in the regenerative space and who are doing such important work struggle to keep their businesses afloat, much less feel well compensated for their efforts and have enough income to reduce their stress or go on vacation. So for this reason, I've partnered with New Society Publishers to give away a free hard copy of The Farmer's Office. All you have to do to be eligible to win this copy is to send me a message through the Discord community. If you haven't already, you can sign up for free through the link in our homepage or on our Instagram bio. I will choose a winner 1 week after this episode is published, so don't hesitate to send me that message. And in case you don't win, you can also get 25% off your next purchase from New Society Publishers, whether that's The Farmer's Office or any of their other titles in hard copy, digital copy, or audiobook, just by entering the code SKILLS25 at checkout. And one last promo before we start this episode: if you are a farmer anywhere in Europe, you can sign up for free to the Climate Farmers community through our website at climatefarmers.org. Now, I mention this because Julia Shanks will be hosting a free webinar on farm financial management for our community members on Thursday, the 28th of March. All of the links will be shared through the community ahead of time, and though we always record these sessions, we'll also be giving away a digital copy of her book during the event for those who attend. So make sure to be there live. With all of that out of the way now, I'll hand things over to Julia Shanks. So welcome, Julia. It's wonderful to talk to you. I've been really looking forward to this interview for a while. How are you doing today?
Awesome. Thank you. Me too. I'm excited to be talking to you and European farmers. This is awesome.
Yeah. Well, look, the financial side of farming is usually where most people check out, right? That's the boring part. That's what people don't want to explore. They want to talk about the animals, the plants, and all of the more tactile aspects, right?
Yeah. Who got into farming because they want to do bookkeeping and financial management, right?
Indeed. But I know that you're going to give us a good perspective on the importance of that and how it actually facilitates us doing the rest of the work that we actually prefer doing. Yeah. So before we dig into that, why don't you tell me about, first of all, how you started to work with farmers in financial management to begin with?
Well, it's kind of a circuitous route how I got into working with farmers. And the short story is that I'm just a foodie at heart, and I've been a foodie my entire life. And one of my first jobs was working at a farm-to-table restaurant in Washington, D.C., long before farm-to-table was even a thing. And my boss there, the chef at the time, we became very good friends. We've been friends now for 30 years. And he ended up buying 100 acres in Southern Maryland and farming organically. And I left the restaurant and started chefing and catering. So the two of us just talked about entrepreneurship and business and how to find customers and marketing and all those things. And when I decided to leave the restaurant world to figure out how to make more money, I just sort of fell into working with farmers. And I did an exercise with my friend Brett in business school. And I was learning about financial modeling in business school. And I was like, all right, I'm going to help my friend Brett. We're going to figure out like which of his crops is most profitable. And we went through this whole exercise and we figured out that he was making 10 cents a pound on his tomatoes, which was his most lucrative or his biggest selling crop. And his most profitable crops were sweet potatoes and okra. So we discovered very quickly that just because you sell a lot of something doesn't mean that you're making a profit. So I just sort of fell into working with farmers through my friendship with Brett and discovered the power of the numbers with him and have just been trying to proselytize numbers ever since because they're magical.
They are magical and they are underappreciated. And this is something that comes up so often in the conversations that I have with the members of the Climate Farmers community is it's often something that people don't want to talk about. But when you ask some follow-up questions, they don't actually often have answers as to where their money is really coming from.
Yeah.
The profitable thing that they do is, and importantly, where they're losing money or could tighten up a little bit.
Yeah.
So where do you start this journey? What are the questions that you ask to get this interest stoked a little?
Well, first of all, I would offer that it's a bit of a mindset shift. I think people are afraid of numbers. They don't like numbers, and it can come from a whole variety of places, from not being good at math in school and just sort of taking that model of who you are with you into your adulthood. It could come from making a mistake at some point in your prior years. Perhaps you filed for bankruptcy or you had a failed venture. And so we take these historical legacy memories with us, and it prevents us from digging into the numbers and accepting where we are and looking at them. And so we have to, number one, we have to sort of address why we're afraid of the numbers and why we're ignoring them. And then the second part is accepting that things suck all the time. It's like, if you go work for somebody else on another farm or in an office, there are going to be things that suck. And maybe things suck 40% of the time, 50% of the time. And you go to work for yourself thinking like, oh, I'm not going to have to do those sucky things. And then you discover there are other sucky things in farming. And whether it's cleaning the chicken coop or spending time in the office, we need to accept that it's not going to be peaches and cream the entire time, that we're going to have to do things we don't like. And that's part of entrepreneurship and business ownership, is acknowledging we have to do the unfun things for the sake of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that numbers are going to be fun, but they're necessary in order to succeed and continue doing the work that you love.
Sure. And even if this is one of your least preferred tasks, it's kind of all the more reason to get good at it and do it effectively, so it doesn't take up a ton of your time, or that you don't get it wrong and then have to go back and spend.
It's so true, because what happens is, if you don't, let's say, keep up with your record keeping, your bookkeeping on a regular basis, let's say you do it once a month, that one day a month is going to be overwhelming. And it's just like, oh God, I can't. And then it gets pushed off until the end of the year. And if you tackle it 10 minutes a day while you're having your morning cup of coffee or your afternoon bourbon or wine, wherever you are, tea, but if you carve out 10 minutes a day to keep on top of it, number one, it doesn't become overwhelming. But more importantly, you can make pivots as necessary. So I'll give you an example. Let's say in January, you've created a budget for yourself and you're like, okay, if all of these things happen, my year is going to be profitable. I'm going to have cash in the bank. It's going to be amazing. And if you don't look at your plan throughout the year, comes November at the end of the growing season, you're like, oh shit, I didn't make my budget. You can't do anything. The year is over. The crops have all gone to seed. The animals are sort of tucked away for the winter. The eggs aren't producing from the chickens because it's too cold, or they slow down, whatever. But, you know, you have a window where you can grow and sell and generate profits. And if you don't look at things until it's the end, you can't do anything. If you look at your books in January, or if you look at your books in April and May, June, and you see, oh, I was supposed to sell $20,000 or 20,000 euros worth of product. I missed my mark. Let me make adjustments. I have time. I can do something. But if you wait till the end of the year, you're done. There's nothing you can do, and just hope for the best for the following year.
Yeah, putting it off can cause a lot of unintended problems, even if you started out with a good plan. I think one of the things that I've learned through the few financial management courses that I've taken is that the one thing you can be sure of is that your plan is wrong.
Yes.
There's always new things that are going to come up. And that doesn't mean you didn't do a good job, but you do still need to pay attention, reflect on these regularly in order to avoid those things that were not planned for or not expected to derail what you had set out to
do. Correct? Yeah. And I it's so true. One thing you can count on is things not going according to plan. But if you have a plan to begin with, then it's about adjusting. It's not reinventing the wheel every single time things go off the rails. It's like, oh, here I know it's going to work. I'm off by this much. I can adjust. So having a plan in place, even if it doesn't go according to plan, gives you a launching pad to make adjustments.
Yeah. So let's, before going deeper into some of the solutions and the ways that we can get back on track, let's explore from your experience what you have seen that is a common way of managing finances on a farm. Probably a lot of our listeners can relate to, and where some of the problems in these habits.
So in terms of record keeping, I used to recommend QuickBooks all the time. I think it's sort of the gold standard of bookkeeping software. And I don't know what's going on in Europe, but in the US, it's just become so prohibitively expensive that I'm not as keen on it as I used to be. I mean, I think it's still a great program, but it's expensive. So depending on where you are in the scale of your business, it may not make sense. Excel is still a really amazing tool. And you can categorize your cash flows, income and out, inflows and outflows. I think the key is to organize your expenses and your cash flows. In QuickBooks, it's called the chart of accounts. And it's basically the naming structure of how you organize all the transactions in your business. So if you categorize them by production costs and general and administrative costs and selling costs and repairs and maintenance, and if you have your expenses grouped according to how they impact your business, it makes it a lot easier to see what's going on. Is my production cost on target, or is that out of line? Am I spending too much on repairs and maintenance? Maybe I need to reevaluate my equipment. What are my selling costs and what are my most productive selling channels? So having your expenses organized in a way that allows you to evaluate the profitability of your business is really the key first step in solid financial management.
Now, there's so many things that you can gain insights into about health, the broader health of the business side mm-hmm. of a farm through the accounting. Can you give me some ideas about something that farmers maybe are not even aware that they could learn about by digging into the numbers that they're keeping track of?
Well, I'll give you an example of a livestock farmer I worked with last year, and he was raising beef cattle, pigs, chickens for meat, birds, and layers. And he wasn't as profitable as he wanted to be. He was trying to build his business so that his wife could quit her off-farm job and work full-time on the farm. And he kept producing more and selling more, but he would look at the bottom line and he wasn't getting ahead. And what happened was he's got four or five different products, and each of the four or five different products has a different cost structure. So it turns out that the cost of production for the beef was 70%. So for every dollar of beef that he sold, it cost him 70 cents. And that gave him 30 cents to go for overhead and living expenses. And then the pigs, the cost of production was 50%. So for every dollar of pork he sold, he would have 50 cents in production costs, 50 cents to contribute to the rest of the business. What happened is he was growing his business and just selling more, but he was selling more beef, which was just wasn't getting him the way he needed to be. And if he had shifted his focus to selling more pork, obviously that requires marketing to sell more pork, not just like, oh, take pork instead of beef. Certainly there's activities involved in selling more pork, but he focused on the least profitable product as opposed to the most profitable product. And he focused primarily on his revenue, his sales, his top line, and not what each product contributed to the bottom line. So there's a lot of information in the numbers, and it's not hard math, but it does require keeping good records so that you can dig into them.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of the math is automated through things like spreadsheets and calculation software.
Yeah.
To calculate it really intricately is not the biggest challenge, actually, but it is being thorough in inputting correct and accurate records.
Yeah, it was funny. We were talking on the phone and we were going through this analysis, and it was a 1-hour call. And at the end of the hour, he's like, holy cow, I can't believe how much we accomplished in an hour. And it only took an hour because he had done the work prior to that to get his bookkeeping systems organized so that we could see the numbers. We could see the cost of production for the pigs and the cost of production for the beef and the cost of production of the chicken. And we could see the revenue from each of the different products. So we could do that analysis.
And that brings me to where some of the main misunderstandings and the pitfalls that you see of holding farmers back from financial success might be. Based on your last story, it's things like focusing on revenue or sale of certain products mm-hmm. without actually understanding where your profit margins are. Where are some yep. of the other ones that you've observed?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about that. That's the biggest pitfall I see. And I see it in so many different ways that people focus on revenue and top line and not bottom line. What does it contribute to my business? And they focus on selling more. And sometimes selling more doesn't get you where you need to be. It could be that you need to cut something out. Like if this farmer cut out pigs, he would actually, or excuse me, if he cut out beef and still raise the same number of animals, he would be more profitable doing less. So knowing where you are.
The way that it's often expressed in our conversations in the community is you'll get people, especially who come from backgrounds of farming where their parents or previous generations have always told them, okay, we're going to increase yield, we're going to maximize production. Mm-hmm. And that can really hide things that are actually tanking your business in the attempt of producing those things are yeah. not actually healthy for the financial stability of a business. Can you talk yeah. about how those metrics can hide the financial distress underlying?
Well, I think that there's sort of a maximum that you can do in terms of increasing yield. I mean, there's only so big that you can raise a pig and still have palatable meat. And there's only so far you can go in terms of maximizing yield. So once we've expended a certain tactic, we need to look at other tactics. So I think one of the big issues also is pricing. And there's a sense of what the market will bear. People have a skewed sense of what's reasonable, what they can charge for their products. So they tend to go to a farmer's market and look and see what everybody else is charging and then charge the same and not consider that their products have a different value proposition. So I can't, to sell my free-range, cage-free, pastured eggs with non-GMO feed next to the caged conventional eggs at the grocery store, to try to compete on price with the grocery store is crazy. So recognizing what your value proposition is, what makes your product special and unique, and charging what you need to charge to be profitable is really important. So knowing what you do and putting value on that and communicating that to your customer. I think a lot of times farmers struggle to charge what they need to make it all work.
Sure, especially when we're talking about farmers who go through such an effort to produce whatever they're creating sustainably or higher nutrition or best mm-hmm. animal welfare. There's a lot of value that needs to be communicated in that, and that could give you opportunities to increase profit and improve your business in many different ways.
Yeah, and with vegetables, I think one of the key selling points also is that the vegetables that you buy direct from a farmer are going to be fresher. So it's like if you buy lettuce at the supermarket, it'll last 3 days. And if you buy it direct from a farmer, it's going to last 2 weeks. So just in terms of food waste, the consumer is going to get better value buying directly from the farmer rather than buying from a supermarket. And I realized that the supply chain is different in Europe. So I know when I was in Spain in the fall, the quality of the produce was so far superior to what I see in the U.S. that it was just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, that's something that we do still have a leg up on than in other places, despite the fact that it's not on a great trajectory. But I'm curious to know from your experience, what are the unique pressures, variables, and risks that farm businesses take on that are less present or not as severe of an issue in other types of businesses when talking about financials?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of really big challenges that farmers face that other industries don't. And the first one is cash flow, because a farmer has to invest in seeds and feed and land management and payroll and all these things. And if you're growing radishes and arugula, maybe it's 60 days, the shortest time frame from when you invest your first dollar or your first euro until the time that you can sell something and get payment. So minimum of 60-day gap in cash flow. And it could be years if you're raising cattle. It could be many years if you're building an orchard from the time that you plant your first apple tree until you actually have a harvest that you can sell. So the cash flow cycle is much harder for farmers than it is for a lot of other industries. Certainly in the U.S., there's a challenge in terms of access to capital, getting financing. A lot of farm businesses need, who can afford a $25,000 tractor, right? Most people don't have that extra cash lying around. So you need to go to a bank or some sort of lender to get the cash to invest and grow the business. And farming, for whatever reason, feels like a very risky venture. And in some ways it is, but we all need to eat. So it's not like people are going to stop eating and the market will collapse and nobody needs food anymore. People will always need food. There'll always be a market, but it does impact the ability for farmers to get financing to grow and sustain their businesses. So that's another big challenge. The third big challenge is uncontrolled risk. So if you manufacture clothing, for example, certainly there's risks in supply chain and risks in fashion. But these are controlled risks that you can do something about. You can find a new market. You can find new suppliers. With farming, you have uncontrolled risk with weather. And certainly now with climate change, who knows what we're going to get? It's going to be wildfires, drought, flooding, hurricanes that are going to, or typhoons that are going to knock out your greenhouses or hoop houses. And we can't control it. I mean, we can make minor adjustments in our contribution to climate resiliency, but overall, it's a lot of it is out of our hands as individuals. So it makes farming very risky and in ways that other industries don't face these challenges. And what's interesting in terms of getting business advice, there are, you know, certainly plenty of business advisors out in the universe, but not all of the business advisors understand the differences in farming compared to other industries. And while a lot of the mechanics are the same, there are unique factors in farming.
Yeah, definitely. And to say nothing, I mean, the market, like you mentioned, is stable in that there will always be consumers, but there are massive volatilities in commodity prices.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Shipping and transportation costs have boomed, and so many overheads, especially in traditional industrial inputs like fertilizers and chemical bulk products, have gone up, what, it was 300% last year?
Yeah.
That's a lot of volatility.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up a good point, and I want to include that a lot of times farmers don't have control over the pricing. So a lot of my clients do have control of their pricing. They sell directly to their consumers at farmers markets, or they have a farm store. But if you're selling through the commodity markets, you don't get to control your price. Somebody else tells you what you're going to get. And so your choice is to either go to that market or not go to the market. You don't have the option to raise your prices accordingly to what you need to do.
Yeah, there are a lot of tricks and real pitfalls in the market in general, but especially in this industry. And I think that's one of the main reasons behind a very high debt rate of a lot of farms. You talk about what it takes to get out of debt and start to reverse these cycles of debt that so many farmers find themselves in. Partly because, like you said, the very high upfront costs, the overheads that begin in the low cash flow, or maybe it all comes in the sale of a single crop at the end. Give us some perspective on this.
Yeah, well, it's funny. Debt and loans, there's a different weight of those words. If you talk about debt, it's like it's burdensome. It weighs on you. And if you take out a loan to buy a tractor, it's like, oh, loans, payment structures. I understand that. It makes sense. So I think there's a framing in what we're trying to do. And, you know, farmers can get into debt because they're financing the day-to-day operations and they don't necessarily have a plan to pay the debt. They don't know what they need to do to get out of debt. So there's the proactive planning of, I'm going to take out a loan because I want to buy a hoop house or I want to buy a piece of equipment. And I know the equipment's going to cost $50,000. My annual debt service, repaying the loan of principal and interest, let's say, is $7,000. So I know I need to have additional profit of $7,000 to make this worthwhile. Not additional revenue, not additional sales of a pallet of tomatoes that generates $7,000, but I need $7,000 in profit. The revenue minus all the production expenses to get to the profit to cover the debt service. So I think sometimes it isn't planned properly what we need to do in order to support the debt that we're taking on, the loans that we're taking on. And I'm currently working through that with a client now. He was about to borrow $200,000 to invest in his farm stand and a kitchen. And we sort of did the math, and it's $35,000, let's say, annual debt service. And he's thinking, oh, $35,000 additional revenue, no problem. But it's not revenue that you need to achieve. You, in order to get the profit, you have all these expenses, $35,000 in revenue. You have the seeds and the labor and the packaging and blah, 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 blah. Maybe you're left with $5,000 at the end of that. And that's not enough to support the debt service. So I feel like a broken record, but it's about profit, not revenue, and knowing what the contribution is going to be, and can it support what you want to do?
Well, as much as we may keep repeating this, it is important enough that it should come up in all of these conversations, the very important difference between gross and net profit. It's
gross revenue.
Yeah, gross revenue. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sorry. I get a little bit wound up about terminology.
No, it's really important. And this is what causes that confusion that can lead to poor calculations. So please feel free to correct me. I'm not the expert. But so we've talked quite a bit about pitfalls, variables. We painted a pretty grim picture up until this point, honestly. And it's probably beating a dead horse because I'm sure farmers are very aware of the difficulties financially of the situation that they're already in. Let's pivot now and talk about where the opportunities are and perhaps some of the awareness or the habits that can start to rebuild a better financial picture for farm business.
So habits, and again, repeating myself, but good record keeping, really understanding your revenue and your expenses, and not just the business as a whole, but the different enterprises. What does the vegetable enterprise do compared to the flower enterprise, compared to the mushrooms or the pigs? And really knowing where to focus your business, I think, is number one, good record keeping. Number two, embracing that it's not fun all the time, and we need to do hard things and make hard decisions, and looking at the numbers, deciding that, oh gosh, I need to scale down. I might need to fire somebody. Or if I want to make this work, I need to scale up and I need to hire people and I need to manage people. So embracing the difficult tasks. And number three is being clear on your goals. What are you trying to achieve? How are you going to define success? Is it a dollar amount or a euro amount? Do you have a financial goal? Do you have a lifestyle goal? Because we can't figure out how to get there if we don't know where there is. So defining what you want to do and then creating a plan to get there. So it can be done, but it does require diligence, and it requires doing not fun things to get there and embracing it. But that said, it is hard work. And so I always want to encourage, you need to still have fun. And if it stops being fun, then we need to reevaluate. But, you know, I sort of set, I call it the suckitation ratio. Like, how much of the time does it suck? And I accept that it is going to suck some of the time. But, you know, I set a suckitation ratio of 50%. So if it sucks more than 50%, then I need to change. So deciding what your suckitation ratio is and honoring that, because if it's not fun, then it's not sustainable. Part of being sustainable is being financially sustainable, but it's being sustainable in your body, working at a pace that is comfortable for you, that allows you proper rest and proper restoration, spending time with family, going on vacation, reading a book, all the things that make life enjoyable beyond work. So we need to figure out how to make it sustainable in total.
For sure. And it makes me think, well, first of all, that was music to my ears, because it's a big part of what I talk about in the training programs and the support that we do for our community is, many people are working towards a goal that is not well defined, whether that's financial or otherwise. Right? They're pursuing a concept of success that someone else defined for them. And this is how I think many get mixed up in goals of production and yield, when really that has nothing to do with either the quality of life that they care for on their farm or the real financial health of their organization. So I was very happy to hear you say that. Now, going a little bit deeper into the metrics and the measurements that can tell us whether we are improving in the areas of financial health that we set for ourselves, we've talked obviously about final profit, not revenue, that being kind of the North Star that we should aim for. And we also talked a little bit about managing cash flow, because you do need positive cash flow if you want to stay afloat. What are some of the other things that you should pay attention to in order to gain a whole and more complete picture of the financial health of your business?
Well, that's a great question. And I do think it's different for each business. And part of it is figuring out the benchmarks for you. Part of it is figuring out what are the right benchmarks for you. So if you have a profit goal of, let's say, 50,000 euro, and I'm making up numbers here, then what do you need to keep your operating costs at? What do you need to keep your production costs at? What do you need to keep your labor at? So figuring out not just what do I want to do in profit, but what metrics do I need to hit along the way? So I can say, for example, in the US, that 3% of your revenue should be spent no more on seeds and 30% on payroll and labor. So, and that may make sense for a farm that's doing 200,000 in revenue. For a farm that's doing 100,000 in revenue, you may need to set different metrics and different benchmarks for your business. And a diversified vegetable farmer is going to set different metrics than a livestock farmer. And if you own your land or if you rent your land. So I don't want to say that there's one standard that you should look for, but figuring out the formula for your business and then keeping an eye on it. Not just like, oh, I need to do 10% profit margin, but if I'm going to get 10% profit margin, then I need to keep my production costs at 10%. I need to keep my payroll at 30%. I need to keep my land expenses at 10%, et cetera, or you know, whatever those numbers are for you so that you can make it work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. And always going back to this idea that the profit that you're looking for is the difference between your overhead and the revenue that's coming in. And there's obviously the way of increasing that by building more revenue, creating more sales. But the other side is reducing any unnecessary or non-essential overhead that is required to get to the products that you can sell. Widening that gap between the two things.
Yeah. And the other thing is that it's also not just net profit. It's like, okay, I have 100,000 in revenue. My expenses were 70,000. I have 30,000 in profit. Mm-hmm. Now that 30,000 or whatever that number is needs to cover debt service. If you have any loans, if you have credit card debt, if you have a mortgage, if you have student loans, which I don't think people in Europe have student loans, but in the US it's crushing.
Much less.
Yeah, but you know, whatever debt you may have outside of the farm or even inside of the farm, your profit, that 30,000 or whatever that number is, has to cover the debt. It needs to cover your living expenses. What do you need to live a wholehearted life, to keep food on the table, clothes on your back, roof over your head? And what do you need to save for retirement? And what do you need to reinvest in your business? So if you want to buy more equipment or make upgrades to the barn or the packing room or whatnot. So we need to consider that the profit goal isn't just some number, but this number needs to cover a lot of things. And we want to make sure that we're setting a realistic profit goal that can achieve our lifestyle goals, including paying down debt, living a wholehearted, sustainable life, and planning for the future, retirement, kids' education, vacations, et cetera.
These are a lot of considerations. I can almost hear people thinking or commenting in the back, well, how do I wrap my head around all of these possible expenses, especially if you're not used to considering your personal expenses, debt service, maybe taxes,
and these
very necessary overheads that absolutely matter to this bottom line. How do we start to wrap our heads around this holistic picture of financial health and how it really sets the quality of life that we're trying to achieve?
Well, I think number one, you have to be honest about it. And if you just sort of, you know, close your eyes and say, oh, it'll all work out, that isn't going to work. So I think penciling it out, what do I need to do to make it work, and being realistic now. In your first 5 years of business, maybe saving $10,000 for retirement isn't realistic, but it's something to work towards. So maybe in the first 5 years of your business, it's like, okay, I just need to sustain myself. I'm not going to do anything crazy. I just need to be able to sustain myself in a very modest way. And then at the 5 year mark, maybe you say, okay, now I want to do a little bit better and I want to achieve these goals. So you can create that long-term vision of where do I want to be and what does that look like? And then acknowledge that it's not going to happen overnight, that we're going to take baby steps. And I'll give you an example. When I started my catering business, I was living in an apartment for $600 a month. And there was a market where I could get chicken and carrots for 69 cents a pound. And I lived on $1,000 a month. And that was fine. And I got the business going. And then as the business grew, my lifestyle upgraded a little bit. I got fish and I got different vegetables. But, you know, it's like you start here and you build something that's sustainable and then you can grow it.
Yeah. It is very individual in that way. And the tendency I know for, and this is not at all unique to farmers, that as soon as you do start doing better financially, you start to raise your own personal spending to meet
right.
new income level. And then you find yourself kind of the same level of stress and urgently mm-hmm. looking for, oh, where did all the money go? Do you have advice for how to control that urge and make sure that that the money is actually going either into savings or into investments or into
yeah.
longer-term planning, which is maybe not what comes up intuitively when we increase our revenue?
Yeah, no, it's hard. And I was just talking with a colleague and she's been working her tail off and all she can think about right now is a vacation. So I think there is a balance between self-care and, you know, there's only so long I could subsist on carrots and chicken before I needed a little more variety in my diet. So I think a little bit of expansion, if you will, is okay. But making sure that the expansion doesn't match, the expansion in your lifestyle does not match the expansion in your business. That it's like if your business grows by 10%, then maybe your lifestyle grows by 5%. So that you can expand, but not at the same pace as your business, because you're never going to get ahead that way.
And beyond the tools that you mentioned at the beginning, services like QuickBooks or going back to spreadsheets, have you found any other tools that are really useful for helping to build the habits, the regular documentation that is required to really have control over your financial situation?
I don't know about other tools per se. There's methodologies of building habits. And at the end of the day, I think this comes down to a regular habit. And one of the things that makes it hard to build this habit is this feeling of inadequacy or insecurity of not doing it right. So finding advisors and resources to help you set up the system so that it is manageable, so that you understand it. Because I know, for example, if you're just getting started in QuickBooks, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So how do you build a system when you don't even know what you're doing? So trying to figure out what you're doing, and not to be too self-promotional, but I have a wonderful book called The Farmer's Office that helps you get your systems set up. And then finding a business advisor or a mentor that can help you, you know, create your record-keeping system in a way that will work for you so that you can sustain it, so that when it comes time to run the numbers, you know what you're looking at. I worked with a client who was like, well, I know I'm supposed to look at my numbers once a week and I look at them, but I'm looking at numbers. I don't know what they say. So finding somebody to help you through that so that you can look at the numbers and know what you're looking for and read them. But, you know, there's a community of farmers that know this, who have been through this, that can support you. And it sounds like there's a great network through your community to help farmers as well.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the book as well, because it's now in the second edition. And I was really curious as to, like, what were the expansions? What were the new things that you felt impelled to include beyond the first edition? What has been expanded since this?
I know we talked a lot about QuickBooks. And when I wrote the book in 2015, QuickBooks Online wasn't even a thing, or it was just starting. And, you know, now QuickBooks Online has totally taken over. So, and it's changed in the last 8 years since the book came out. So number one, the two chapters on bookkeeping have been updated to be more reflective of where we are today. When the book came out, as I started teaching workshops and talking with people about the tool, I realized that there are places that I was a little thin So one of the things that I explore in the first edition that I really dig a lot deeper into is break-even analysis. Mm. And break-even analysis is a way of setting sales goals. So recognizing that as you grow your business, some expenses are going to increase differently than others. So if you, for example, increase your revenue from 100,000 to 150, that means, let's say you're growing more tomatoes and raising more chickens. So you have more seeds and more soil amendments and more feed and more packaging. So some expenses are going to go up the same as your revenue. Other expenses, liability insurance, your rent, bank fees, they're all going to kind of stay flat. So how do you wrap your head around setting sales goals when everything changes with your expenses? So break-even analysis is just this magical tool. It's actually really quite simple, but you can use it for setting sales goals overall for your business. You can use it for evaluating new opportunities. Does it make sense to go to sell this market or that market? So I dig a lot deeper into break-even, which I think is amazing. Also, I've developed a new metric, not just profit margin. I made 10% on the dollar. But what is your profit per hour? So how much time did it take you to generate that amount of profit? And would you rather make $9 an hour and have $100? Or would you rather make $15 an hour and have $90? I would rather have less money at a better hourly rate because I can do more and I can't create more time. So I want to maximize every hour of my day with the highest profit per hour. You can always find more money. You can't find more time. Mm-hmm. So I dig in a lot into the concept of profit per hour. Some people call it opportunity cost. And then there are also two new chapters in the book. The first new chapter is on resiliency. So climate change is real. COVID taught us a whole lot about resiliency and pivoting. And then we have the war in Ukraine, which subsequently led to record inflation. So we have all these new factors in our world economy that we didn't even think about 8 years ago. So how to manage risk through diversification, through scenario planning, through strategies to pivot. And then there's also a new chapter on the entrepreneurial mindset. So we talked about this early on. It's like, okay, nobody gets into farming to do bookkeeping and financial management, but there are certain things that we must do in order to run a successful business. I'm not going to tell you how to farm successfully. You know how to farm all the production and everything you need to do, but there's this whole sphere around the farming in terms of marketing and labor management and leadership and financial management that we need to dig into and embrace. So I delve into the entrepreneurial mindset and offer tools and tips to cultivate a sustainable business, not just a sustainable farm.
Oh, that's really good. I'm looking forward to getting to that portion. It's something I've struggled with as a freelancer, as a farmer so many times, because we all get into this thinking, oh, my day is going to be full of farm activities. Well, you start to realize how many other responsibilities that are involved with running a business. And it then starts to become a struggle to find the time to actually do the tasks that you got into doing this to begin with. So I'm really glad that you explore that in the new edition. Now, you also put out a lot of other educational resources and, you know, offer different types of support for your clients. Can you tell me about those and how our listeners can find out more about them?
Absolutely. So www.thefarmersoffice.com is an online learning portal. So I have a lot of video tutorials on how to set up bookkeeping systems, how to evaluate investment decisions. So we talked about taking on debt. How do you know if it makes sense to take on debt to do the things that you want to do? There are video tutorials on how to do cash flow budgeting, and then basic tutorials on bookkeeping and accounting concepts. So the way I think about it is you can't set up a system for tracking your finances if you don't understand the basics of accounting. Mm. So getting into what the hell does accrual accounting even mean? I mean, maybe you've heard about it, but like, I don't know. And what is depreciation? And why does it matter? How do these concepts impact how we set up our bookkeeping system so that we can read the numbers, so we can make sense of them, so that we can make decisions to grow more profitably? So a lot of the foundational skills, as well as tips on how to use Excel. So lots of videos. I think there are like 70 videos, video tutorials on my website.
That's awesome. Well, I'm so glad that there is somebody out there who really understands and knows how to communicate the challenges of financial management that is specific to farmers, because I've just found so many people complain about the resources that are available out there just not being relevant to their context or pressures and the stresses that are unique to working in this industry. And I think it's so valuable to have reference to and experience with these challenges and how to navigate them for the financial success that, quite frankly, we're in this for, as well as the lifestyle that comes with it. Because everything is easier and more enjoyable if you're not struggling to pay your bills, if you feel well compensated for your work.
Yeah. Oh, say it again. That is so important. We want to keep doing the work that we love. So we need to build a sustainable business. And certainly farmers in the U.S. sort of take themselves as the martyr of the food system and don't value their time and their worth and struggle to charge what they need to do to make it work. And if we want to keep doing the work that we love, we need to charge what we need to charge. We need to know our numbers, and we need to embrace some of the unfun things so we can continue with what we love in a way that is enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, there's so many more aspects of this subject that I would love to explore with you, but let's talk about maybe making some of this available to the climate farmers community so that farmers can ask their own questions and we can dig into the real challenges that they're having in real time. So we'll put a bookmark on this for now, but I definitely look forward to exploring this more with you very soon.
Awesome. Thank you. It was great chatting with you. A lot of fun.
Yeah, likewise.
Thanks again to Julia. I've linked to all of her resources on the show notes for this episode on the website. And of course, don't forget that you can be entered to win a free hard copy of The Farmer's Office by sending me a message through the Discord community. And if you're a member of the Climate Farmers community, you can also be entered to win a digital copy of the book by attending our live webinar on farm financial management with Julia on Thursday, the 28th of March. And if you're not a member, but you are a farmer in Europe, you can sign up to the Climate Farmers community for free at climatefarmers.org. Now, before we wrap this up, just remember that these episodes are only the beginning of the learning resources, design and coaching services, in-person courses, and interactive community that are available through Regenerative Skills. The Discord server is our free community where you can connect with other like-minded listeners, exchange ideas, stories, tips, and resources, as well as interact with me directly and quite a few former guests from this show. Our Instagram account, @regen_skills, is the best place to see the projects that me and the team are working on, both for clients and collaborators, as well as on our own properties. I'll also be announcing the certification courses, workshops, and gatherings that we've got coming up later this year. If you're interested in getting dedicated support for your own project, you can now schedule a free planning session with one of our team members through the request form on our website. You can also find all the links, show notes, and past resources there at regenerativeskills.com. We truly believe that no matter your experience, your knowledge, abilities, resources, or background, you can be a powerful force for regeneration on this planet, and we're here to help you find your path. So as always, remember to keep taking those little steps every day towards a regenerative future, and I'll be right by your side along the way.